we're probably looking at least two Queenslands. There's often three Queenslands and sometimes a few more.
People may have felt that we did too much too soon, and probably that was a reaction to being out of office almost all of 20 years prior to that. But what they've seen over the last 3 years is a government of inaction.
There is a very, very pertinent question in the minds of many Queenslanders about whether or not there really is any sort of difference between One Nation and the LNP.
And that's what the balance of power is about. We do not have an upper house in Queensland. We're a unicameral government. We're the only one in this country, and I believe One Nation will make a great upper house.
When it comes down to it and there is the chance of forming government, then other things come into play, and some of the things you might have said before the election have less meaning and less import after the election.
Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast, coming to you this week from Brisbane. The Queensland election is being closely monitored nationally for whatever federal fallout it has. This is a state of big swings, with the Palaszczuk Labor Party unexpectedly tossing out the Newman government in an upset result in 2015. In this election, observers are reluctant to make any confident predictions about the result. But there's general agreement that one feature of the election is the resurgence of Pauline Hanson's One Nation, which is polling strongly and might end up with the balance of power in the new parliament. In this podcast, we talk with Griffith University's Anne Tiernan, Deputy Premier Jackie Trad, Shadow Treasurer Scott Emerson, One Nation's Steve Dixon, and also the Courier Mail's National Affairs Correspondent, Dennis Atkins. Anne Tiernan is a political scientist at Griffith University and a long-time Queensland election watcher. Anne Tiernan, how does this election look to you compared with how it looked, say, 6 months or 12 months ago?
Yeah, Michelle, it's certainly not the start Labor was looking for. I think Anastasia Palaszczuk has fallen in popularity from being, you know, a much preferred premier to Tim Nicholls to really having had a fair bit of gloss taken off. A fair bit of internal tension in the party has become apparent mostly through the Adani issue. And there's been some candidate stumbles, certainly with the decision to sack the controversial member for Palmerstone, Rick Williams, on the cusp of the campaign. So I think that Nicholls is looking a little more confident. The coalition LNP seems to have done a bit more work and probably started better than many of us might have predicted 6 months ago.
Can we talk about the Adani controversy? Because suddenly Labor has said, or the Premier has said, that she would veto any financing from the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility for the railway, which would accompany the mining project. What's behind all this? We've had a number of explanations, but is it at the base of it really reflecting the divisions in Labor and the quest for green preferences?
Look, I think it's all those things, Michelle. The Adani coal mine has been controversial from its inception, and Labor is very divided over the need for jobs and growth in the regions, which have really suffered in the downturn, and then were hit quite hard by natural disasters. So the unemployment issues and the disaffection in those communities in the central and northwest of Queensland are real, and Queensland premiers always have to balance those issues. But on the Labor side, of course, in the southeast, with the environmental issues around the Barrier Reef and the very real threat of green preferences, particularly in a seat of South Brisbane, obviously the Premier is caught between a rock and a hard place. Now, the decision that she took last Friday to announce that she was going to veto a loan that is still under consideration by the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility has been described by some people as an overreaction. Latterly, it's been described as a masterstroke, but, you know, claiming green preferences in the southeast and capitalising about that. It's complicated by the fact that the question of loaning $1 billion to an Indian coal company that has an ambivalent record on environmental and other matters, you know, and questions over its financing more generally, has been a concern on both sides. And interesting, a very long-serving LNP member, former LNP member Vaughan Johnson, of course, came out today and said, well, you know, the Premier got it right. So it's not sort of breaking in conventional partisan ways.
So do you think in net terms this decision's going to cost Labor votes or win Labor votes?
Oh, I think it's really hard to say, because every day of this campaign, the Premier seems to be getting blindsided. You know, yesterday by the mayor of Rockhampton, who was her preferred candidate in a Rockhampton pre-selection, who didn't get up, deciding she was going to run as an independent. So, you know, I've been thinking about that Hunter S. Thompson quote, you know, wild treachery and weirdness. That's what this campaign is like just every day. It's sort of Malcolm Turnbull only happening in Queensland.
So in this election, are we looking, in fact, at two Queenslands?
We're probably looking at least two Queenslands. There's often three Queenslands and sometimes a few more. So going back to Federation, Michelle, as you know, there was always the opportunity for a far north Queensland and then a sort of a central north Queensland. So those communities do think of themselves very much in those terms. The southeast, though, is quite variegated as well. And a lot of the benefits of economic growth have flowed primarily to Brisbane and the Gold Coast. And I suppose other economic areas have not enjoyed those benefits. So there's a fair bit of tension on the outer urban periphery as well, I'd say, as well as in those regional communities that we'd usually look at.
Apart from Adani, what are the main issues in the election?
Look, I think the major issue is just economic uncertainty, you know, restructuring unemployment. I mean, essentially, major issues like Adani, electricity, cost of living, infrastructure, these are about jobs and uncertainty in the regions. And I think, too, there's a question of spreading the benefits of growth. For a long time, as you probably remember, we had a lot of population growth here, net migration was up. Then that sort of fell away. Now it's on the move again, but housing affordability is a real tension for many Queenslanders. Quite a lot of postcodes have very low-income families. So I think there are some real and genuine inequities that are starting to manifest.
And what about federal issues? Of course, federally, the scene's consumed with the citizenship crisis. Is that playing out at all here? Do people notice it? Do they think this is just ephemeral nonsense?
I think it just reinforces their general view that at no level of government are they well served. We've had controversies in local government. I think no one is very enthused about an early state election. And I think the whole federal citizenship issue, running into the same-sex marriage debate, running into, you know, Michaelia Cash and whatever, just reinforces people's sense that politicians are focusing on things that aren't important to them and just feeding into a general sense of disillusionment that is reflected in the primary vote.
And how are Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten coming across? I don't think we'll see Malcolm Turnbull out in the regions much.
I don't think we'll see Malcolm Turnbull much at all because he's got issues of his own. But also in the federal campaign, that whole innovation and science agenda was toxic. Federal Labor has spent a lot of time here, certainly in the 2015 Queensland campaign and then again last year. Bill Shorten had spent a bit of time here, but they tend to send people like Tanya Plibersek, who always campaigns well here. But there's a number of sort of up-and-coming local Labor shadow ministers. Chris Bowen was here last week talking about inclusive growth. So they're certainly kind of spending some time here. The question of whether that's translating amid all the cacophony of other noise is a question. And whether people are really tuned in at all, I'm not sure.
One Nation, of course, is talking up its book. Pauline Hanson thinks that they'll do as well as 1998. What do you think about that prediction?
Well, look, the economic circumstances feel very similar to that period, I think. And I think it's true that probably the level of commitment to both major parties is significantly less than it was at that time. Pauline Hanson's not running in this campaign, you know, despite
appearances.
Well, you'd appearances.
Think she was.
You
and,
would think
and
she
many
was.
People... seem to make that mistake.
Yes, indeed. And she generates an enormous amount of free publicity from media in that respect. I think both major parties today have really started to focus on her and on that fact and starting to criticise the policies. I will be surprised if the member, their leader, their state leader, Steve Dixon, holds his seat of Budrum. And I think that introduces a whole lot of dynamics in terms of negotiating what happens after an election.
And of course, he won that seat as an LNP candidate.
He certainly did. He certainly did. And it overlaps that seat with the seat of Fairfax, which had Palmer United, which was the last big protest party that we had in Queensland not that long ago. So look, I think there is a lot of disaffectation. I think it's very much going to come down to the candidates at different levels. I'm not sure Malcolm Roberts picked the right seat to drop into while he was deciding whether he wanted to try and recontest the Senate.
But it's almost as though Queenslanders embrace these minor parties because they want to protest. They don't seem to be put off by the fact that the Palmer Party, for example, came and went in, what, two or
no
three
time
years?
Flat. Yeah, absolutely. and fought among itself the entire time, much like One Nation did sort of in that 96 to 98 period. Look, I think it tells you that people are very frustrated and both leaders are saying, oh, yes, we're listening to people. We understand that they're really frustrated, but that's not translating into policy commitments or confidence that people have that they are being listened to. So I think what happens afterwards will be very interesting. I think it was 15 or 17 days in 2015. This electorate is pretty volatile, as we saw in 2012 with the huge swing to Campbell Newman, and then the swing back in 2015. I think, you know, Tim Nicholls, is he cutting through? He certainly seems to have worked a lot harder, but I think we haven't seen, because Labor's campaign has started not that well, it doesn't seem to me they've brought out everything they've got in terms of Nicholls. I don't think there's much love for either of the major parties, and I think it's just going to be really interesting. It's one of those campaigns that just every day you wonder if people can sustain the interest and energy.
I know it's early in the piece, but do you think there's likely to be a hung parliament? And if there is, which way do you think that the One Nation vote would go, or members would go?
When Queenslanders voted for four-year terms, I gave up predicting because I never thought they would agree to that in the referendum that was held a while ago. So I'm not very good at predictions. Most people seem to think that a hung parliament is the likely outcome with our after the redistribution and 93 seats and so on. Look, pre-poll voting opens on Monday and we will know a bit more about preference flows and the final candidates by then, I think. Because, of course, we've got compulsory preferential voting reintroduced this time as well. So it's so difficult to predict this one. I think the sentiment so far is just really sullen and hard to read, and we'll see quite different results in different parts of Queensland according to economic performance. I think the big issue will be how the South East reacts, actually, where the majority of the seats are, and whether this whole question of Adani will start to show up in polls from this point forward. So, and whether Anastasia Palaszczuk, who has looked pretty distracted and just not on form, and she's being criticised for forgetting things and so on, she just doesn't, the logistics don't seem to be in place, all that sort of stuff. I think whether either leader can find sure footing is really going to determine what happens. I can't predict which way it'll go. I'm just not sure that One Nation is going to be the force that is being beaten up, because there are five deal breakers. When you look at those quite closely, there's a few problems in those commitments.
It'll be a fascinating time ahead. Antin, and thank you very much for talking with
us. Thanks very much, Michelle.
Jackie Trad is Deputy Premier in the Palaszczuk government and seen as a possible future leader. But in her South Brisbane seat, she faces a stiff challenge from the Greens to hold the electorate. Jackie Trad, to go to your seat first, are you confident you'll be able to hold off the Green challenge? You're now getting Liberal preferences. That should help you.
Thanks, Michelle. Look, can I say from the outset, I have never taken my seat for granted. Back in 2012, when the seat was vacated by Anna Bligh and there was a by-election soon after the general election in 2012, there was a very strong challenge from the Liberal National Party. And of course, this is a seat that has fallen to the Liberals in the past. So I have never taken this seat for granted, whether it's Liberal opponents or Greens opponents.
But now it's Greens' opponents,
yes.
So are they really resurgent in this seat?
Oh, look, they are throwing everything they have at it. There was a media article recently around the Greens' political party flying in interstate campaigners to the seat of South Brisbane. And I do know from other campaigns throughout the Southeast Queensland corner that a number of Greens' political party members have been redeployed into South Brisbane to run a very strong campaign against me.
Now, to the campaign generally, Labor's had some early glitches. There's been the backflip over the Adani mine and some mistakes by the Premier in the early days. Are you confident the campaign can get back on track quickly?
I'm absolutely confident, Michelle. I know that when you fire the starter's gun for any race, of course, there's a few things that might happen along the way, but I do know that there are some very strong, solid policy announcements that are coming up. They're just around the corner, and I know that they will be able to really capture the attention of Queenslanders, and I know that the Premier is our best salesperson.
Do you think that Labor divisions have played into the troubles that the government here is facing?
Well, Michelle, there aren't any Labor divisions. I think that where we are seeing quite a lot of fracturing is on the Conservative side of politics. We see the rise of One Nation, and we also see quite a number of former LNP members who stood for Campbell Newman when he was running to become Premier with Tim Nicholls desert the Liberal National Party and run for One Nation at this election. So really, there is a very, very pertinent question in the minds of many Queenslanders about whether or not there really is any sort of difference between One Nation and the LNP.
But there have been some well-publicised divisions over Adani. Now, you've always been critical of that project. Can you explain exactly what happened within the Labor Party that ended up with this backflip? Why was that done?
Michelle, I have always been a very strong supporter for no public funds going to a foreign billionaire mining magnate. I think that this project should absolutely stand or fall on its own two feet, and the Premier has made those comments herself.
Just to clarify that, we're talking about the rail for the Adani project
absolutely.
In terms of the public fund.
Absolutely. When we contested the 2015 state election, our policy was very clear, and it was a policy that was set against a secret deal between Jeff Seeney and Campbell Newman and the Adani Group around the provision of $500 million to Adani to build their railway line. Now, when we became the government of the day, we scrapped that completely. That was our commitment, no Queensland taxpayer funds for this project. And what we saw at a federal level is the Federal Liberal National Party established this Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility that provided a financing avenue for the rail project for Adani. Now, that has always been an issue that presents some sort of contradiction and complication for us as a political party and as a government, particularly considering that we came in so strongly against the notion of any taxpayer funds going to an Indian billionaire mining magnate to run to build their infrastructure.
And yet for some time it seemed that financing would get support from the Queensland government, and now it's not. So how did that happen? There have been various explanations.
Yeah, and just to be clear, there is a master facility arrangement in place in terms of the NAIF application and all of the due diligence and business case aspects. None of that has been presented to the Queensland government around the rail line for the Carmichael Mine project. So there was nothing to consider at that stage. But we also always said that the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility and the desire to give $1 billion to Adani was with the federal government. It was Malcolm Turnbull's desire and deliberation to give an Indian billionaire mining magnate $1 billion worth of Australian taxpayer funds. And those people who didn't want to see that happen should absolutely direct their concerns to the federal government.
Now, do you think that Labor's promise to veto that financing will in fact be a negative or positive for you in this campaign?
I think that what transpired was absolutely the best possible thing in terms of what the Premier understood was happening. At the end of the day, the Premier prides herself on her integrity and the fact that a number of LNP operatives in Canberra were actually peddling this conflict of interest story and made the Premier take swift action. But at the end of the day, the Queensland public will have their say on whether or not this was the right thing to do. And they'll also have a say at the next federal election about whether or not giving $1 billion to Adani is the right thing to do.
Just to be clear about the conflict of interest for our non-Queensland listeners, this was because her partner worked for a legal firm on the application for financing.
Provided some advice around the application around the NAIF loan.
Now, in terms of other issues in this election, how would you summarise what it's about?
I think that this election is fundamentally about jobs and the economy. We have seen over the past 3 years the creation of more than 122,000 jobs in the Queensland economy. And this is at a time, Michelle, when there has been quite a lot of transition, particularly in regional Queensland. And a large part of that employment growth has come from a number of state government programs, Back to Work, Works for Queensland, programs that are about stimulating regional local economies and getting people into jobs quickly. But what we have also seen is a significant investment in infrastructure. In the city of Townsville, for example, an investment in the new stadium. And for many people, they can already see construction underway, and that's going to mean jobs in the future, as well as the expansion of the Townsville port. So there has been a lot of deliberate focus on how we're actually going to stimulate regional economies and grow those jobs. But I also think this election is about the Liberal National Party and Tim Nicholls and his record, his track record. He has made some suggestions around right-sizing the public service, around retrenchments, and we do know that it was particularly regional Queensland and the health sector that copped the biggest whack when Tim Nicholls was Treasurer and there were tens of thousands of jobs axed from frontline services.
How much are federal factors playing into the campaign, for example, most notably this schmozzle over citizenship?
I think it's reflecting poorly on the federal government. I also think that it's quite telling that the campaign is 10, 11 days in and the Prime Minister is yet to come to Queensland. I think it's very clear that the Prime Minister is a net negative for the LNP campaign in Queensland. So a number of factors happening at a federal level, I think, are reflecting or playing out in Queensland. Most notably for my electorate, it will be what happens with the marriage equality postal survey, which is due to be finalised and announced next week. So I know that many people in my community will be wanting to know what the outcome is, but more importantly, wanting to know what the decisive action following the survey is.
What about Bill Shorten? How much campaigning is he doing here?
So Bill has, and quite a number of federal ministers have already been up to Queensland over the course of the last 6 weeks particularly, and they have been campaigning for local candidates. I've had a number of federal MPs assist me as well. So federal Labor has been very active in the Queensland space.
Obviously, especially from down south, everyone's looking at how One Nation's going to poll in this election. What do you think? What are you picking up on the ground?
Well, One Nation is clearly a threat. I remember what Queensland was like when there were 11 One Nation MPs in the Queensland Parliament.
Could they get as many again?
Well, Pauline Hanson is saying that she reckons they'll get more. But what we do know is that they can only influence the next government if they are in a coalition type arrangement with a minority LNP government. And that is the reality, Michelle. We either have a majority Labor government in this state, or we have a minority LNP government governing with the support of One Nation. And I think that is a recipe for disaster.
Now, there's another option, and that is a minority Labor government with One Nation in the balance of power, not as part of that government, but in the balance of power. Can you see that as a possibility? And how would that work out?
It's not a possibility at all, Michelle, because the Premier has signed a statutory declaration and she has tabled it in the Queensland Parliament to say that under no circumstances will there be deals before or after this election with One Nation. The Labor Party refuses to enter into any preference discussion or even entertain the idea of having a situation where we are governing at the behest of One Nation in the Queensland Parliament. We know it will be a recipe for disaster.
But it's numerically possible, surely, that you could have a minority Labor Party situation and One Nation giving support under some circumstances. On supply and confidence.
Well, the Premier has made our position clear and that will not happen, and she has signed a statutory declaration to say that she won't be doing this, and it's tabled in the Queensland Parliament. So our leader has spoken and we 100% support the position that the Premier has taken.
Jackie Trad, thank you very much for talking with The Conversation today. Scott Emerson is Shadow Treasurer and a former Transport Minister in the Newman government. Scott Emerson, after the massive public reaction against the Newman government, how can you credibly so soon expect people to endorse the LNP again?
Well, I think, Michelle, over the last 3 years, what they've seen is the cost of a do-nothing government. I understand that people may have felt that we did too much too soon, and probably that was a reaction to being out of office almost all of 20 years prior to that. But what they've seen over the last 3 years is a government of inaction. Anastasia Palaszczuk and Labor have done very little, and whether people are paying the cost. What we're seeing is record high electricity prices, cost of living going through the roof, such as Rego, doubling inflation rate. We have the second worst unemployment rate in Australia, with youth unemployment in some parts of Queensland more than 50%. People are paying the cost of a do-nothing government. This morning I was out on the roads in my local electorate and people are complaining about growing congestion. When we were in office in this area, we started building extra lanes on roads to deal with traffic congestion, robust congestion. And since then, nothing's happened. And that's really indicative across Queensland. A do-nothing government at Anastasia Palaszczuk and the cost of doing that, people understand that.
Do you think that people reacted against the Newman government for what it did or the style in which it did it? Did they see it as arrogant and unpredictable?
I think clearly we made mistakes, I think. And the things, if we could go back and do them differently, we would have. But I think also we were trying to fix up what we felt was almost 2 decades of Labor's problems and trying to fix it pretty quickly. Sometimes we didn't take people with us, and sometimes we did things we maybe wouldn't have done the same way this time. And we've acknowledged that. But Queenslanders do want to see their state competing up there with, say, New South Wales and Victoria to lead Australia. We see independent analysis like the ComSec State of the State report, instead of competing with New South Wales and Victoria to lead Australia, we're battling for the economic wooden spoon against states like South Australia and Tasmania. For me, someone who was born in Queensland, raised my family here, that's an extraordinary situation to have. We're down there battling with what we used to call the rust bucket states, and now instead of up there fighting to win and lead Australia like New South Wales and Victoria.
This week your party has said there will be no forced redundancies, public service redundancies, if you're elected. But are people really cynical these days? And won't they in fact think, oh, well, they say this now, but what will they really do?
Well, we've been very upfront about our policies and been very clear. We made that announcement again this week, but we've said that for quite a few weeks and months before that. We've been very upfront in terms of what our policies are. But what this campaign is about. And what we've seen this so far in the first 2 weeks of this campaign is a premier that's flip-flopped over excuses and explanations on a whole range of things. People are seeing they can't trust Labor. I can tell you that I predicted some weeks ago, and I think we're seeing it now, that we will see from Labor the dirtiest campaign in Queensland history, a campaign of lies, of smear and of scare. And that's what we've seen so far. We're putting our policies forward. We're upfront about those policies. We acknowledge that we've made mistakes in the past, but we're determined to build a better Queensland, to get Queensland back up there, battling to lead Australia, rather than saying it's good enough for us to be down at the bottom of the heap.
But politicians on neither side are trusted. Isn't that the problem for all of you in a way?
I think that, look, I agree with you, Michelle. There's out there, there's a cynicism and a kind of unhappiness with politics as it is, and major parties. But our job out there is to convince people that we do have a plan, that we're the only party for a real plan to get Queensland back up again. We've already announced the second day of the campaign. After the announcement on the Sunday, we went out straight up the first day on the Monday and said, here's our economic plan. 500,000 more jobs over the next decade. A cut to payroll tax to help small business. Went straightforward in terms of a simple, straightforward, but comprehensive and effective economic plan. And we've been out there announcing positive plans every day since. And I think you've seen a very strong contrast in the first 2 weeks of the campaign so far between an LNP putting up policies, positive policies, to make a real difference to people's lives, whether it's giving cheaper electricity, cutting rego costs, helping them battle these rising crime rates, as opposed to Labor over the last 2 weeks. Really, all they've been talking about is themselves, their own members, whether it's Rick Williams that the Premier said was her excuse for going to an election. We've seen problems with the Rockhampton pre-selection, and now Anastasia Palaszczuk's captain's pick that wasn't successful at pre-selections running as an independent. We've seen issues in terms of Joanne Miller. Labor's been talking about itself for the last 2 weeks rather than talking about the issues that are really important to Queenslanders.
Now, the opposition is very strong in supporting the Adani project. Are you satisfied about the probity of the company after the revelations that have come out in Four Corners and elsewhere?
Well, look, we believe that this project will create thousands of thousands of jobs for Queenslanders. And that's what's important out there. You're either for jobs or you're not for jobs. And clearly, Anastasia Palaszczuk, with her flip-flopping over the last week or so, is only interested in one job. That's her own. We've seen that from Labor. We believe that we need those jobs. We're always committed to jobs. When I travel around Queensland, I do that regularly. I was in Cairns, say, yesterday. We go to North Queensland. They are struggling with jobs. In Towns, for instance, over the last year, they have had the worst unemployment rate in that city's history. The LNP is committed to jobs. Anastasia Palaszczuk seems to be only interested in one job, and that's her own, and trying to win green preferences in inner Brisbane seats.
Are federal factors coming through in this campaign? For example, the total shambles over citizenship.
Oh, I think people are scratching their heads over that whole mess down in Canberra, but I think people understand that this election is about Queensland issues, where Queensland is going. So I think people are kind of dismayed about what's been happening in Canberra in terms of the citizenship issue, just as a bit of a mess down there. But what I'm hearing out there is people understand that this election is about Queensland issues, about the fact that we're not competing, not up there fighting with the other states to lead Australia. That's why we've got the second worst unemployment rate in Australia. We lead Australia in terms of business bankruptcies. We lead Australia in terms of as a strike capital of Australia, all under Labor, a Labor government that's beholden, owned lock, stock and barrel by the unions, and that's what we've been seeing.
Now, are you getting any help from your federal colleagues? How much campaigning will Malcolm Turnbull be doing?
Of course, our federal colleagues are always welcome up here. I don't know what Malcolm's schedule is. I'm sure he'll be up here during election campaign. But obviously, we work very closely with our federal colleagues and welcome them here in the campaign. But people understand that this is about Queensland issues, where Queenslanders going into the future. They want to see Queensland working again, back in business, rather than the 3 years of inaction and the cost of inaction by Anastasia Palaszczuk and Labor.
One thing that's being watched very much nationally is the performance of One Nation. Now, what are the LNP doing on preferences towards One Nation?
Well, nominations have only just closed yesterday and we haven't made a final decision on that. But what we've said for months now is that we'll decide that on a seat-by-seat basis, and that will be what we'll be doing.
So how do you think One Nation will poll in this election?
Oh, look, the one thing I'd say, and that's going to be a question for the voters, but one thing I would say, look, we saw in 1998, we saw again in 2001, if people vote for One Nation, they will get a return of Anastasia Palaszczuk and her do-nothing Labor government. That's what happened in those previous elections. That's what the risk is in voting for One Nation. You vote for One Nation, you will get back a Labor government, Anastasia Palaszczuk and her Labor government, that has wasted 3 years in Queensland doing nothing, and we're now paying the cost of that.
Now, if there was a minority LNP government which had to depend on One Nation, not in any form of coalition, but simply as a balance of power party, how awkward a fit would that be?
Well, I'm not going to talk about hypotheticals. I believe that we can win a majority at this election, and that's what we're fighting to do. We believe we can. Look, people understand where Queensland has been going backwards under Labor. We've had a very strong first 2 weeks in this campaign. I believe that we will win a majority at the election. So I'm not going to talk about hypotheticals, but we've made it very clear, as you've indicated, there's no preference deals, no coalition, and there'll be no place at the ministerial table for One Nation.
Scott Emerson, thanks for talking with us today.
A pleasure, Michelle.
We're here with Steve Dixon, the one and only member at the moment for One Nation in the Queensland Parliament. He's a defector from the Liberal National Party, and he's fighting to retain his seat of Budrum. Steve Dixon, why did you leave the LNP?
Well, I think the two major parties generally have defected away from the people. They've lost their course and nobody really knows what they stand for. And this has happened all over the world. It's happened in Europe, the United States, Germany, France, Venezuela, New Zealand, and now it's coming to Queensland.
Was it any particular one motivating spur or just a general discontent?
It was a bit like a volcano. It continually to build up and build up and build up. And I can think of three main things. The lack of empathy for people who are being impacted by not being able to get a hold of medical cannabis. That was one of the main contributors. Dropping the age of anal sex from little girls and little boys from 18 to 16. I was told if I didn't vote on that, my pre-selection would be up in jeopardy. And just the course and direction and the belief system within the party and not being able to deliver for my electorate because we were told we're a safe seat, so only marginal seats gets funding. That disappoints me greatly as it disappoints residents of our area.
We've seen in this area signs, I'm sticking with Steve, but to what extent will it be a hard seat to hold?
I think there's going to be 93 different contests in Queensland in this election and there's not a safe seat anyway.
But what about this seat? Are you fairly confident or really nervous about whether you can hang on to it?
I don't panic about anything because it doesn't help. What I do is work hard. I work consistently and I was an independent when I first got involved in politics on the Sunshine Coast. I had Liberal National Party tap me on the shoulder to ask me to run against sitting Labor ministers and I did and I was successful. This used to be a Labor area. I changed that and my son is the local councillor for the area as I have been. We have a great working relationship within our communities and we always put people before politics.
So you're hoping to get votes really from both sides, Labor and your old LNP vote?
Well, at the moment we're putting all sitting members of Parliament second last. The Greens will be at the bottom.
So what sort of reception is One Nation getting in this election so far?
I went on the Battler bus yesterday up
to
Gympie.
This is Pauline Hanson's bus.
That's correct. Well, One Nation's bus. I went to Gympie with Pauline yesterday. I met her at the airport a couple of days ago. She was treated like a rock star when she came into the airport from India. Exactly the same thing happens when the bus lands in Gympie. People come out of their shops. They run out. They want to see her. They want a picture with her. She is the most recognised politician, I believe, in this country today.
Do you think that quite a few voters are actually thinking that somehow Pauline Hanson is running in this election?
I think Pauline Hanson, as I said, is the most recognised politician, and she is here to assist with our campaign because she's the leader of our party in this state. But unlike Malcolm Turnbull, for some reason, he doesn't want to come to Queensland.
Well, I was going to ask you, are federal factors playing into this state election? And what are people saying about not just Malcolm Turnbull, but Bill Shorten as well?
I think right across the board, people are disenfranchised with major political parties. And the statement I made earlier still rings true to this question. It's a global phenomenon.
But why are they feeling disenfranchised?
Well, they've been left behind. And this is big business has left them behind, the churches have left them behind, and political parties have left them behind. And that is something we have to learn from as human beings. People like good customer service.
And is your feedback that they feel that Malcolm Turnbull and Bill Shorten don't give them that good service, that they're not empathetic enough?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if it was just me saying that, we'd think it was just one politician in Queensland, but it is a global phenomenon and it is happening right here in Queensland and throughout Australia. People don't trust politicians anymore.
And what about the citizenship issue? You've lost a senator out of that. Are people talking about that and what do they feel about that?
Well, they think Canberra is an absolute shambles, and what people are now asking the question of is how many prime ministers were there illegitimately, and are they going to pay their superannuation back? Because that'll be the next step. That needs to be drilled into past people that are getting public benefits that are paid to them for the rest of their lives who may never have been eligible to be either a prime minister or members of parliament. That's the next one we're going to have to jump over, because I believe there will be an election before February of next year at a federal level.
What, because of this issue?
It's all turning to custard. The whole thing is falling apart, and now they've got to come out and expose their flaws. And by that I say there are many members of the federal parliament who are still probably dual citizens.
Now, just looking at the campaign more in a more Queensland-focused way, what are the main issues and themes that One Nation's running on?
Well, we're very straightforward. We're so blatantly obvious, we've thrown it all out onto the table. Our issues are relating to cost of electricity, cost of living across the board. We've made a commitment that we will reallocate the Cross River Rail money in Brisbane. It's one of the biggest projects being put forward by the Labor government. That project is $5.4 billion. They've been told by Infrastructure Australia it's not needed until the mid-2030s. We're going to reallocate that money and build a coal-fired power station in North Queensland, duplicating the rail on the Sunshine Coast, dams and weirs from Townsville to Rockhampton, upping the Brumblewall Dam here to create water connectivity throughout the state, which will secure southeast Queensland for the next 100 years, and also putting $400 million into the Mount Lindsay Highway. But we go one step further than that. We're going to drop the cost of energy by 20% for all residential households and businesses throughout the state.
That sounds ambitious. Now, what are people saying about the Adani project? That's obviously been in the news in the last few days with the Premier changing her position. What's the feedback on all that?
Adani Mine, it was approved by the federal and state government. The real issue at the moment is, will the federal government give an overseas multinational company $1 billion to build a rail line? We've been very open and transparent about that, as Senator Hanson has, for 6 months or more. If there is to be a rail line built, it will be built, we believe, by the Australian people for the Australian people, and we will receive the revenue from that process. And it is not just about the Adani Carmichael mine, it's about all of the mines in that area. If there is to be revenue made, which is $600 million a year, we want that coming to Australian coffers instead of $1 billion of taxpayers' money being given to an overseas multinational company who will just filter that money away from our country.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, you're on your own at the moment in the Queensland Parliament. What is your prediction for how well One Nation will go in the election? How many seats do you think realistically it can get?
That'll be determined by the people of Queensland. I cannot put a number forward. I spoke with Graeme Richardson going back about 10 or 11 weeks ago in Townsville, and I asked Graeme that very same question. I said, Graeme, where do you think the Queensland election's going to go? And he said, if anybody tells you they know, they're bloody lying.
But I think Pauline Hanson has said that she thinks she'll get as many as you got in 1998, which was 11.
Well, the potential is there. We have done a deal, a direct preference swap with the Katter Party, and I believe every seat that we run in and the Katter Party will run in will win that seat, or they'll win that seat. So that could be 10 to 15 seats straight up. So I'm not going to say there is a minimum or a maximum number of seats. If the swing is on, the swing is on. If the swing is not on, it's not on. You know, but I honestly believe there is significant change happening in our state, and the tsunami is coming in here on the 25th of this month.
Now you have a compulsory preferential system. It was optional preferential before. Is that going to make a big difference?
Absolutely.
What will be the effect?
I actually personally don't like it, because we would prefer not to say that we recommend that person or any other person as second, third and fourth, but we have to. We've got to fill out every single box. And I'm disappointed that there has not been an education program put into place by the Queensland Electoral Commission to educate Queenslanders, because if they just vote one, of which they're trained to do now, their votes will be invalid. And I think that is a very sad day that people have not been well and truly made aware through advertising campaigns. I think there will be many votes that are invalid.
But do you think this is likely to favour the LNP, Labor, One Nation?
I think it's a mixed bag. My following of the last federal election, it's a bit like a shotgun effect. It was random. It was all over the place. I don't think people really follow how to vote cards as much as they used to. I think people think for themselves, and we're basically telling people, put us first and you vote for whoever you like after that.
Now, just finally, if One Nation gains the balance of power, and there's been quite a few people, commentators think that that's likely to happen, which side is it likely to support? Inevitably, the LNP?
Not at all. We will go with whoever meet our demands, and those demands will be quite severe because, as I said earlier, the Cross River Rail project is number one. That project will be killed and that money will be reallocated throughout the state to create prosperity, cheap water, cheap energy. They are but a few. And that's where our line in the sand will be. We'll move forward from that point.
So it'll play tough if it has the power to play tough.
Absolutely. No hesitation. That's what the balance of power is about. We do not have an upper house in Queensland. We're a unicameral government. We're the only one in this country. And I believe One Nation will make a great upper house.
Steve Dixon, thank you very much for talking with us today. Dennis Atkins is the National Affairs Editor of the Courier Mail, and he sums up the campaign for us. Dennis, if we can start on Labor's faulty beginning to this campaign, how much damage has that done to them, and where do they go from here? Do they have fundamental problems, or can they put this start behind them?
Well, it was a very bad start to the campaign for Labor, Michelle. The Premier, Anastasia Palaszczuk, was dogged by anti-Adani protesters, and these people interrupted her launch, and then they interrupted her first press conference the following day. After that, security got a bit better, and they managed to keep these protesters away from the cameras. But that presence really drove home to the Labor campaign that they needed to try and get a way out of this problem. The problem is that in the north of the state, development is very popular, and this huge coal mine is extremely popular, especially around Townsville, where unemployment is through the roof. But down in Brisbane, there's great antagonism about the proposal. Green voters don't like it, and a lot of people don't like the idea of giving a big federal loan to a multi-billion dollar Indian company. So to sort of straddle these two things, Labor had a difficult task. Now, I'm not sure exactly what options they went through, but where they ended up was Anastasia Palaszczuk announced that her partner, Sean Drabs, had been, through his work with Price Waterhouse, on one of the committees that looked at the application for the loan for Adani. And she said, well, that just settles it. I'm not going to approve 1 cent of taxpayers' money going to this. And she can do that because the states have a veto under the North Australia Infrastructure Fund.
Now, do you think, though, that was just an excuse? Because it does seem to have come very late in the piece, that explanation.
Well, she must have known this before the first week of the campaign. And if it was going to be a problem, as you say, it was very late in the piece. They really should have known and handled it. And in fact, the Integrity Commissioner told the Premier that it wasn't a problem, that she could have sort of just excused herself from any discussions and it would have been fine. But instead, she sort of went for the nuclear option of saying no to any loan, and that then threatens the mine going ahead.
So what was the real reason?
Well, I think they were trying to find a way to distance themselves from the proposal so that they could lock in green preferences and green support in Brisbane, but doing it in such a way so it didn't make them look like they were opposed to the mine itself. Now, they may have achieved the first of those two aims, but they certainly didn't achieve the second. And now there's an impression that comes after all that, which is competence. because they looked incompetent. And I think that's where they ended up. They started the second week of the campaign trying to distance themselves. The Premier had her lines a little bit better, and we'll see whether or not she's been able to put a lid on it. But I think the damage may have already been done.
Now, we're talking in the middle of this second week of the campaign. How much of an agenda is Labor putting to the people?
Well, not much at all, really, and I think this is a big problem for them. Their policy proposals are essentially public sector job creation and government plans and things like training schemes and so on. There's no new sort of big idea coming out of Labor. If anything, they're fighting the last campaign. They're fighting a campaign against Campbell Newman and Tim Nicholls. And as we know, Michelle, from watching as many elections as we have, you know, sort of, you don't fight the last war, you fight the war you're in now. And I think this has been a tactical mistake for them. I don't think they're doing it that well. They've got some good advertising which attacks Tim Nicholls, and that's probably going to be effective. But will it be enough? I'm not sure at all.
Well, obviously, Tim Nicholls, who was part of the Campbell Newman government, has his own baggage, pretty heavy baggage, and also, at least looking at it from Canberra over the months, he doesn't seem to have been cutting through very effectively in the run-up to the election. In this campaign itself, how's he coming through, and are people willing to forgive and forget what happened last time?
Well, we'll see whether people are willing to forgive and forget. I think there is a lot of residual resentment towards Tim Nicholls. People haven't forgotten the Newman term. It was a shock to Queensland. 14,000 public sector jobs is a hell of a lot to take out of the system. Tim Nicholls, I thought, had a terrible start to the campaign. He came across wooden. He read his opening statement, and I commented at the time he looked like he was reading it for the first time. It was so badly delivered. But he gets up in the morning and he goes out, and you know, I think he might be earning a few points for just sort of determination and persistence. But clearly the LNP have got a problem, and they know they've got a problem, because standing next to him day after day after day is his deputy, Deb Frecklington, who's the member for Nanango, which is Job Jelke-Petersen's old seat. So they know that his image has to be softened a bit by having his female deputy next to him.
And of course, Anastasia Palaszczuk has her own problems in terms of, I guess, image and leadership and the division in Labor, because Jackie Trad, her deputy, is a possible contender even for Premier if the government scrape back. Is that...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's always right? There. And yeah, I think that a feature of the first term, of the Palaszczuk government's first term, has been tension between the Premier and the Deputy. It hasn't come into the public light. They've managed to keep a lid on it, but yeah, you don't have to go very far down George Street where the government offices are to hear whispers and stories about people sort of talking behind other people's backs, and a fair bit of paranoia that floats.
And is that policy-based?
No, it's ambition-based.
Always stronger than policy, or almost always stronger than policy in elections and in politics. Now, you mentioned differences between Brisbane and the regions. Is it possible you could get a result in this election where the voting trend went one way in Brisbane and the other way in the regions?
I think that's very possible. I mean, the Courier Mail's Galaxy poll from last weekend pointed to a split that's sort of almost getting towards a third, a third, a third. We've got a third of the vote is in Labor's pile, we've got a third of the vote with the LNP, and then a third of the vote with others. And of that others third, 18% is One Nation. So you're going to have a sort of anti-politics vote which will be dominated by the Greens in Brisbane and dominated by One Nation outside of Brisbane. So you're going to have trends going in different directions, and in some areas some interesting cross currents. But I think it is going to be it's already a hard election to read, and it's going to be a very hard outcome to put your finger on until you actually see the seats fall and the numbers come up on the tally room board.
Why do you think there's been this surge for One Nation, and how do you see their campaign going at the moment? Pauline Hanson, of course, we all said that the WA election was a bit of a knock to her, but of course she seems to have bounced back quite effectively. This is her home state. Many people seem to think she's running in the election indeed, even though, of course, she's federal senator. So how do you read all that?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, she did have a really bad start to the year this year. Western Australia was involved in that and some bad publicity. But she then went underground and I think quite cleverly she stayed out of the public eye, and she has now got a second wind. And I think it's stronger than it was before. You're right, most people think that when they vote in this election and they vote for One Nation, they'll be voting for Pauline Hanson. She's got rock star status. It's quite extraordinary. When you look at her sort of launching her battler's bus with her bottle of Yellow Glen Pink.
Bus, not plane this time.
Yes. Yes, she's staying away from the plane. But I think that the 2016 federal election and the fact that she got, you know, four senators elected, and she has been treated seriously by the government now for over a year in Canberra, has normalised her in the political process. So she's not sort of the novice that she was. She's not the sort of someone who's making mistakes and getting things wrong. She is actually part of the political process, but she is also a vessel for the anger and the resentment towards that very process that a lot of voters feel. So she's managing to sort of both hate the chaos and create the chaos at the same time.
Are federal issues intruding into the campaign? And what do people think about Malcolm Turnbull? He doesn't seem anxious to spend too much time up here.
No, I think the LNP are very grateful that the summit season is upon us and Malcolm Turnbull's going to be spending a while in East Asia. He's not popular in Queensland. He's never been able to sort of click it with Queenslanders. I mean, John Howard was the last Liberal leader who got Queensland, and I think he got it through some pretty bruising history along the way. But finally, he got Queensland, and he was quite proud of himself when he did. I don't think Tony Abbott got Queensland, and I don't think that Malcolm Turnbull does. So I think we'll probably see Malcolm Turnbull here. I'd be surprised if we see him here more than once, and we won't see him outside of southeast Queensland. Federal issues have fed in, but it's more a case of people are unhappy with the way things are, and they're blaming the federal government for a lot of that. They also think that this citizenship debacle that's going on in Canberra is just, you know, politics at its absolute worst, and the sort of drain the swamp mentality that you hear so much of is really coming out to the fore as a result of that. So I think those things are driving the LNP crazy. Whether it is enough to prevent them from having a good result, we'll wait and see, but it's certainly helping One Nation more than it's helping anyone else.
Dennis, just finally, could we run through the possible outcomes for the election itself and also the federal implications of whatever the result is here? What alternatives are there for the election outcome?
Well, I think
post-election, yes. I guess you'd say.
Well, I don't think we're going to see a clear winner. It is impossible to see how either the LNP or Labor can get to 47 seats.
So we're into minority government?
Yes, one way or the other. Labor have said that they won't go into any sort of deal or arrangement with One Nation, so that puts that aside. I don't think if the Greens win seats, it would be one, possibly two at most, but I think even that's a long shot.
What about the Katter Party and the Independents? They'd obviously be willing to do some deal with them.
I think that we'll have to see how many of them there are. They're sort of changing around in that a couple of them have retired.
Could be new ones, though.
Could be new ones. I doubt it. I think we're going to end up with a couple of Katter people at most, and we'll see. But, you know, two people is not going to be enough to help Labor.
Do you think, though, if Labor was in the best position, albeit in a minority, to form government, and One Nation was willing to provide support on confidence and supply, that Labor would adhere to not forming government?
Well, you could never say never. I mean, you know, sort of when it comes down to it and there is the chance of forming government, then other things come into play, and some of the things you might have said before the election have less meaning and less import after the election. So, yes, I would say it's unlikely, but you never know.
And so if there's a minority LNP result, but One Nation can get them over the line with assurances of supply and confidence, then that would be an outcome, obviously.
That would be an outcome, and I think that's the most likely outcome. It then becomes a question of how many One Nation MPs there will be. If there are a lot, in 1998 there were 11. I'm thinking at the moment there'll be at least that many again. And if there are quite a few more than 11, then One Nation will come to the table with some pretty valuable bargaining chips.
Now, just to finish off, the federal implications of this election.
I think it could be very unpleasant for Malcolm Turnbull. If the LNP managed to get there, but they have to get there with One Nation support one way or another, and there is a very low LNP vote. Our poll had them at 32% primary last weekend. They're going to have to improve on that. If they stay at that level, then there will be a lot of blaming going on, and the blame will be pointed directly at Canberra. So I think that the biggest federal implication will be how much blame and is pointed at Canberra and at Malcolm Turnbull for what's likely to be a poor LNP showing, even if they do end up managing to pull together a government out of the mess.
Dennis Atkins, thanks very much for talking with us today. And that's all from our Queensland election podcast. But before we go, can I direct you to the Conversations Fact Check, which is running a special series on the Queensland election, checking out dubious or controversial statements that are being made during the campaign. And also, I'll be reporting the University of Canberra's focus group research, which is being done this week and late in the campaign in Brisbane and in Townsville. But for now, it's goodbye. With thank you to my producer, Eliza Burlage. We'll be back with another podcast very soon.